My experience was about understanding myself, and until this day, it's still happening. I'm still learning about myself. I'm still understanding myself, getting to know myself better. And I've been in remission for 4 years now, and it's, I'm not counting. I'm not going, well, if the pain returns, I got to do this. I'm not focused on any of that. It's just about learning how I understand the world, how I understand my place in this world, and how it continuously shifts. Because we're all on a specific path today, and that path could be different tomorrow, and that path could be different after tomorrow. And my way of living life is to experience what's happening right here, right now, as the days move and the years and the months and the weeks and the hours and so on and so on. Just experiencing life.
December the 5th. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. My name is Eddie Lindenstein. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Hope everybody had a great first weekend of December. I know that I did. I went motorcycle riding with a buddy of mine, and it was freezing. I think it was in the upper 30s. We rode for, I don't know, probably 4, 5, 6 hours, something like that, up in northern Washington, basically from around the Bellingham area. Stopped at a couple of breweries, things like that. And before I kind of jump in a little bit more on that story, I wanted to remind you that you can support the show by going to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, leaving us a 5-star review if you like what it is that you hear. And I am also on Patreon. So Patreon, as a reminder, is a place where you can support content creators such as myself that do podcasts or comedy shows or YouTube shows or make music or whatever floats your boat. By going to Patreon, that's Patreon.com/ the Mind and Fitness Podcast. And essentially there are various levels of contribution that you can make to the show, and based on whatever amount that it is that you choose to put towards the show, you'll get certain types of value. So as a reminder, the first patrons for the show, Arnie, thank you so much. Barbara, thank you so much. And Kim, thank you so much. So what they have done is that they have put forward either $8 per month just to support the show, get a nice shout out, $25 per month, which gives you actually access to a couple of bonus shows every month. So twice a month, I'm going to be doing either video and or audio shows that only patrons will have access to, but it's basically going to be a Q&A. So if you go and do the $25 level, you can email me any questions that you want answered, Eddie@themindandfitnesspodcast.com. Email me whatever questions you want. I've spoken to some of the greatest experts in the world on this stuff. I've read so many of these books. I've researched so much of this stuff that whatever I can answer to my greatest ability, I will do in those bonus shows. And then $75 would get you a 45-minute one-on-one consultation with me. So can be a good launching point for a coaching program if that were something that you wanted to do, one-on-one coaching. So let's kick into the show. So something that I wanted to talk about before we get into today's interview is a new symptom imperative that I discovered a few days ago, and it didn't last long. But essentially, what happened was I was out with my buddy Matt, and we were doing our motorcycle ride, and we got just, I don't know, 5 miles away from my house, and I've been kind of toying around with buying a new helmet for, I don't know, a couple of years now. A little bit more seriously looking in the last 7 months. I've had the same motorcycle helmet for 7.5 or 8 years now. But then I came across this article that talked about the actual degrading of the safety materials, the EPS liners and some of the impact liners inside of a helmet. And that basically after about 5 years, the oils in your hair and the weather conditions and things like that are actually degrading the material that's on the inside. It gives you a greater chance of having a head injury. So in the event of a crash. So I knew that it was definitely time to replace, but that sped it up quite a bit. So I had it pretty well nailed down to the couple of helmets that were at the top of the list for me. I ended up picking one that was a little bit more versatile. It's called the Shoei Neotech 2, if you're a motorcycle fan out there. The part that was troublesome, though, is that it's a $700 helmet. And a lot of people have no problem dropping this kind of money on motorcycle helmets if they're motorcycle riders. But I've been always been like a $170 type of motorcycle rider. And, you know, granted, I do ride a lot more now, and I ride a lot more in the colder months now. And I just find it a lot of fun. You know, could have been another helmet. That'd have to be that helmet, that kind of thing. But basically, you know, I got it. I had a blast with it all day. I really loved how it felt. It was nice and comfortable. It's a modular style helmet. It's heavy, but it's about as heavy as the helmet that I've had for so many years. But then the next day, it was really bothering me. I had like a lot of guilt about spending an amount of money on myself. And I don't spend that. I don't spend really any money on myself. I work out in my garage, and I wear the same clothes. And I think the outfit I'm wearing right now, my jeans and my shoes, are 5 or 6 years old. You know, I just don't really find a need to buy material things all that often. So this was kind of my excuse, but just the overwhelming feeling of guilt. And it was like my symptoms in all facets have just been, you know, they've been washed away for a good amount of time now. Reflares, things like that, just haven't really happened. But it was basically like this guilt turned to intense guilt, turned to anxiety, turned back to guilt, then turned into back pain. Then my neck, my stomach was fluttering again. Then kind of all these things, and you know, I started feeling like I had like tennis elbow, and you know, just a lot of strange stuff. And I texted Kelsey Graham, who was on the show a few months ago, and started telling her about the symptom imperative. And it's just wild, guys, like kind of reaction that you can get when really it's just a distraction. You know, again, so like I have that feeling of guilt. I'm trying to push it away, not think about it. So then I start getting back pain because I'm trying to not think about it. I'm trying to not experience that, you know, that guilt, that sense of guilt. And once it was gone and the physical symptoms were gone, like they were gone. And, you know, that's just the way that it is. I think that human emotion is so interesting because it's something that I spent so much time avoiding for so long, meaning my own emotions, that now when they happen, it's tough to describe. It's like there was a situation I remember at work today, actually, as I record this, where, you know, somebody just said kind of something shitty to me, and I just didn't really... I got upset about it, and I, you know, sort of expressed it to another friend of mine, and you know, that was really it. It was just kind of is what it is. And I think I've told this story in the podcast before, but I did this internship in college, and I commuted like 200 miles a day to do this internship. And I remember at the end of it, I expected this amazing job offer to be a producer for this radio station, and the offer wasn't what I had expected. And I remember expressing that to the program director at the radio station, and the quote that he kept using was, it is what it is. And that term like haunted me for like 10 years. I hated it when anybody said that term. And now I think back all this time, like guys with chronic pain and TMS and emotions, like emotions are powerful. We try and push them out of the way. We repress them. We think that they're so dangerous that we just can't handle them. When really, if you just kind of think back, that it is what it is. Like the situations are what they are. Upset about something, sad about something, mad about something, angry about something. Go ahead and feel it. But it is what it is. And there's no reason to push it away or repress it or bury it, because it just is what it is. So with that being the open, today's interview is with, I'm so excited, Ralph Ruiz, who you can find him online at ralphfitness.com, which is ralphfitness.com. Ralph is he's a mind body coach. He does NLP, so neuro-linguistic programming. He does hypnosis. But he had one of the really super terrible diagnosis that I kept self-diagnosing myself with for so long, ankylosing spondylitis. And he kind of walks us through that. Ankylosing spondylitis, if you Google it, the images are terrible. And you know, you got to go on special diets and take biologic medicine and all this kind of stuff. And ultimately, he was able to cure and rid his pain by using the mind-body connection. And he's actually coached hundreds of people by using those exact same approaches. So I think that his story is super interesting. It sounds like he certainly has a big belief, like I do, about the necessity of moving forward with your life and moving forward with full activity. He talks a lot about boxing and that being a great piece of rehabilitative medicine for him. You know, pretty amazing story. So without further ado, here is my man, Ralph Ruiz, calling out of Manhattan. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein, and I come to you today with Ralph Ruiz. Ralph is he's a TMS coach. He's a life coach. He's joining us all the way from New York. Couldn't get further away from Seattle, where I record this. But Ralph's on the line. Ralph, how are you?
I am well. Thank you for having me today, Eddie.
So I think, based on what I know about your story, I think you're a super interesting guy. And I think the first thing that jumps out at me, because there's a whole variety of different, like, you know, diagnosis ranging from the super serious to the, you know, the typical backache that a lot of listeners to this show get. You had one of the, I mean, scarier ones, I guess is what I would call it. And it was actually one that I had researched myself and my doctor Googling, but ankylosing spondylitis. I want to start there. I guess, like, when did you start getting back pain? When did you, when did you start having symptoms? What made you go to see a doctor about it? What was some of the whack-a-mole maybe that you played early on with symptoms, if any?
Oh, that's a good question. AS is something that my mother has as well, or at least has a diagnosis for it, because she also went into remission at some point in our family exploration. My first flare-up happened when I was in eighth grade, and I was hospitalized for a week, and doctors were making assumptions that they believed there was some type of arthritis or something, but they weren't sure. Then the symptoms went away, and it came back when I was 15. And that's when it got more serious, because my right knee swelled up. Sometimes my foot would swell up, and I was having pain in the buttocks. And then that's when doctors started to mention the word ankylosing spondylitis. And I'm looking at them like, what are these people talking about? It was almost like I didn't even recognize the word. And it started to come and go, as usual, and disappeared for a while. And then when I was 19, that's when it came, and it just stayed there. It didn't go anywhere for many years. It was just there. And it gradually got worse. Once I was diagnosed, about 2 years after that, I was told that, okay, this is what you have. The symptoms became much worse. It was almost like the diagnosis was a curse. It just made everything much worse after that.
Like the pain amplification. I think a lot of people kind of go through that, right? Like you might have like a 5 out of 10 of pain, and then somebody gives you a diagnosis and suddenly it's a, you know, it's an 8 or a 9 or an 11 in some cases. So you have this, I'm assuming that, so you had some of the blood work done, right? Because there's the genetic marker that people can be tested for. I'm assuming that you were tested for that, right?
The genetic marker they look for is HLA-B27, and then they also look for inflammation in the spine and in certain areas.
How did you get tested for the inflammation? I feel like it's a buzzword a lot of times. It's sort of misused. Was there some kind of imaging or something that you had done that mm-hmm. they could show you the inflammation on?
Yes, and my X-rays also showed some fusion in the SI joints. So I have both my SI joints are slightly fused and my pelvis is slightly tilted.
And you know, one of the things that that I think that is really pivotal to talk about, especially with some of the imaging that can come back. I mean, if you Google ankylosing spondylitis, it's it's like a graveyard of the, you know, all the bad imagery that a lot of us get when we go get an X-ray or an MRI or something like that. There's also the idea that even if this is the condition, like Nicole Sachs is a great example, because she has spondylolisthesis and her lower back is destroyed on imaging. And when she had pain, it looks exactly the same as when she doesn't have pain, right? So that doesn't change. And so, you know, I'm curious, like, you know, you went from a place of having, and I've read some case studies on your website, ralphfitness.com, and I've seen a lot of case studies and you know, stories of people that have worked with you that are back in the gym living their lives, doing their thing and that kind of thing, that there's a difference between what you saw in imaging, what the genetic marker revealed, and the actual, pain existing. And so I guess talk about that. Like, how did you get from you have this diagnosis and you have all this pain to still having the diagnosis and still having the bad imaging, but not necessarily having the pain?
That's a good question. There's also people that I worked with who, physically speaking, are much worse than I am. There's people I've worked with who have almost their entire spine fused, and they went into remission. You know, the spine still looks the same, like you said. They have limited mobility, but the pain is gone. So how do we move from having physical a physical manifestation to getting, like we say, getting rid of the pain, regardless of what the physical stuff is there? From what I've seen, it comes down to the person's willingness to just move forward. You know, I know that sounds very simplistic, very strange, but it requires a lot of willpower to simply just move forward internally with the mind-body connection, letting go of limiting beliefs, letting go of your fear. And most importantly, there's one thing that I can share with people that I would say every single person has to do when it comes to mind-body healing, is that they have to rekindle their ability to trust their body. That's an absolute must. You have to be able to trust your body. When a person comes down with AS or TMS or whatever it is, a lot of the times they feel like their body has failed them. They feel like their body has turned on them. Some people even make jokes about it. They put memes on the internet about my immune system attacks itself. What's your superpower? That kind of stuff.
Right.
And that's where the shift needs to happen. You got to be able to say, okay, I trust my body. My body is not going to hurt me, as well as the mind, because when it comes to the physical pain, there's a mental manifestation of it as well. For example, any person who has chronic pain, if they're listening to this, you could take a moment, close your eyes, and try to imagine yourself moving without the pain. And a lot of people have trouble doing that. A lot of people have a really hard time imagining themselves without the pain. So you also got to be able to trust your mind, you know, understand that whatever anxiety or panic or low energy or fatigue you're experiencing, it's not your body attacking you, you know. So that's where healing needs to start for anybody. For me, where did it start? It started with boxing. I became interested in boxing again, mostly out of anger. And I wanted to learn how to box with pain. I figured, okay, since the pain is not going to leave, I might as well just learn how to box with pain. And there were a lot of things going through my head at the time. I was suicidal and I was having a lot of emotional turmoils as well. But somewhere within me, I was so frustrated that the frustration became willpower. It actually turned into a form of just living. And a few months being in the gym, I forgot about the pain. It disappeared and I went into remission. I didn't even notice I was in remission. I completely forgot about it. And then at one point, certain family things happened. My dad came back into the picture and the pain returned. And at that point, I realized, wait a minute, I've seen this before in my personal life. It's like, I've seen this. I've seen this happen before. There's something about my life right now that's triggering this. And I wasn't sure what it was, but I was certain that there was something in my life that was triggering the stress, that was triggering memories I didn't want to see, that was triggering feelings I didn't want to see, and it was manifesting itself physically. And that's where I got very serious about exploring my inner world. It's like, if the pain disappeared once and I didn't even notice it, there's got to be a way to do it again, you know? And from that point forward, just got more serious about it, more serious about myself in a nutshell.
Roughly what year and how old were you when you got like the initial diagnosis, you know, basically, you know, almost like the death sentence at first? How old were you when you found that out?
I was about 22 years old.
Okay. And then that point where the pain had gone away and then when the remission happened, I guess how much time separates those?
Say about 4 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So like around 26 is when I started to shift more and more into that, but I wasn't counting. You know, that's I can look back and say, yeah, it happened there and tell the story and it makes perfect sense. But when I was going through it, I wasn't counting. I wasn't trying to get into remission. I wasn't trying to heal. I wasn't like mentally focused on it. I was more curious about what was happening in my life that was creating a physical reaction. I was more curious about what was it about myself that I did not want to know. You know, so I wasn't like, okay, I'm going to do this and then I'm going to go pain-free. It became more about understanding myself. you know, my experience was about understanding myself, and until this day it's still happening. I'm still learning about myself, I'm still understanding myself, getting to know myself better. And I've been in remission for 4 years now, and it's, you know, I'm not counting, I'm not going, well, if the pain returns, I got to do this. I'm not focused on any of that. It's just about learning how I understand the world, how I understand my place in this world, and how it continuously shifts, you know, because we're all on a specific path today, and that path could be different tomorrow, and that path could be different after tomorrow. And my way of living life is to experience what's happening right here, right now, as the days move and the years and the months and the weeks and the hours and so on and so on, just experiencing life.
I love what you said a second ago. So you said, what is it that I don't want to know about myself? Do you think that maybe in this, you know, TMS healing part, like, is that the missing link for a lot of, so many people get stuck, right? But like, what is it that they can admit? It's simple for you to say, right? Because you've been from the, you know, you started from the bottom, now you're here, right? So, so you've seen both sides of it. I guess maybe talk a little bit more in depth on that, this idea of like, what is it that we don't want to see about ourselves? Maybe give some examples from clients that you've worked with or people that you've talked to, or if you're at liberty yourself, but, you know, what are maybe some examples of some of those that maybe people just aren't willing to face?
That is a very good question. And the irony behind it is that I always, in my coaching program, one of the very first things I tell people is, when you're on this journey, you cannot hold anything sacred. And that's something that in the entire holistic mind-body industry, there's a lot of talk about spirituality, and you have to be more spiritual, you have to be more holy, you have to forgive, you have to balance out your chakras. And there's this whole dynamic going on of how to become more sacred, more holy. So when it comes to mind-body healing, you cannot hold anything sacred. It's about being honest with yourself. What is it that you're experiencing within yourself? So from my personal experience, it can go in two ways. It can go in two directions. We can be speaking to a person who absolutely does not want to see what they consider to be flaws within themselves. And then we can be talking to a person who could be the complete opposite and does not want to see at all what they consider to be arrogance or pride or thinking too highly of themselves. So some people are stuck in the humble trap, trying to be as humble as possible and more sacred and more holy, and they don't realize that that's what's making them sick. And then some people are doing the opposite. They're trying to become more and more grandiose, achieve more and more, change the world, you know, create this huge impact that, you know, everyone praises them and sees them as this, you know, amazing individual who's the next James Bond or something. So it all depends on the individual. And the majority of the time, it's a matter of coming back into balance. For those that don't want to see, for those that are in the humble trap, they have to work a little bit more towards seeing how great they are, you know, seeing that they matter, seeing that, you know, in this world they have a special place, a unique job or function that they do, and they do it better than other people, you know. And of course, better is always relative, but there's, you know, everyone has their specific gifts and talents. For people who are grandiose and running away in their minds trying to achieve this super thing, then it's about exploring more of the humility, you know. So it's all about balance at the end.
You know, you bring up the humble trap, and though they're not directly related, one thing that I think about, because I feel, you know, social media can be really, really good and really, really bad. I've been working with a couple of students from Georgetown University. They're writing a book for the year. Like, it's a senior project kind of thing. And they were interviewing me about podcasting, you know, starting a podcast as a hobby. And they were talking about what is social media? Like, you know, all these people talking about how great the world is and all that kind of stuff. Like, is that maybe part of the problem in healing? And we got into this discussion about it, and we talk about like the humble trap. To me, there seems like there could be a connection to also, too much like outward gratitude. You know what I mean? Like I'm so great. Like all these things are, You know, despite my bad health and all this, I'm so grateful for this, so grateful for that. And there's quite a few people that I interact with on social media that are in this terrible chronic pain that are stuck in the healing, but they talk about how much gratitude they have. But, you know, I can sort of think, you know, I can almost like imagine that they're, you know, are you really all that grateful for everything? Mm-hmm. You know, do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. And I know exactly what you're talking about. I've observed that too. And it's ironic because there are a lot of people who are stuck in that phase of being more grateful and more humble. That's part of the humble trap too. And in order for them to heal, they have to first admit that there's something else going on. For example, someone can go outwardly talking about how grateful they are and, you know, the universe has blessed me in so many ways, but then inside they feel like they want more out of life. It's like, I want more out of life. I want more stuff. I want to have more experiences. I want more money. And they won't admit it to themselves. Why? We don't know. That's up to the individual's self-exploration, and it's also dependent on the individual's perception of themselves and their reality. For whatever reason, they might see value in being grateful in terms of value to their self-esteem. You know, it's like, this makes me a great person if I just show how grateful I am and hide that there's a part of me that wants to make bank and wants to, you know, do earthly things.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, totally. And I guess, like, what, you know, that's what we're talking about really is like the shadow self, right? It's the shadow, the hidden part of you. I guess, where would you recommend that people sort of express that? Like, what's some of maybe your favorite outlets for people to express that shadow side of it? Like, once they can kind of get to the place of, okay, maybe there are parts of me that you know, want to make more money, or they, you know, a variety of different things. I guess what are the good outlets that can really be used to sort of express that shadow dark side, if you will?
That's a good question, because I personally don't believe that the opposite of repress is express. I don't believe that in order for us to stop repressing a shadow part of us, that we need to do something about it. I believe that something as simple as just acknowledging it, and accepting it within yourself is more than enough. And if anyone wants to take it one step further, they can speak it out, like literally say the words. And you can be sitting on your couch meditating and then realize, have one of those thoughts cross your mind that instead of sitting there meditating, you much rather be working in another job to make more money and buy yourself your dream house. The second you see that thought, and you see that it connects to you, instead of pushing it away and going, oh, no, that's not holy, that's not humble, you just acknowledge and you go, oh, look at that. There's a part of me that, it doesn't mean it's you, but there is a part of you that wants material things. It wants a house. It wants more money. And the second you say that to yourself, you go, I do want a house and I do want more money. Once you acknowledge it, the energy that was attached to that thought or that experience within yourself, the energy starts to cool itself down. It starts to find its own balance. And once it finds its own balance, then from there is up to you to determine whether or not you're going to take action. You know, you don't have to take action. You can simply just acknowledge, yeah, I want that. And for those that choose to not take action, then the next question is, why not? You know, unless it's something that can harm you or society, why not? Why not take action? Is it because you don't believe you deserve a nice house? Is it because you don't believe you can actually get there? Is it because, you know, and so on and so on. And for those who choose to take action, the question they would be asking themselves is, why? You know, what does this mean to me? Does getting a nice house and working another job to make more money, is that something that I'm pursuing in order to add a form of value to myself? And that's the key word, value. Is getting a nice house going to make me better in terms of self-esteem and self-image? And if so, then it's time to explore that as well. You know, so overall, we want to focus on building that relationship with the self, bare naked self, no house, no money, nothing, just self. You know, who am I and how do I see myself? How do I perceive myself? And what do I mean to me? And then from there, you decide whether or not you're going to take action on getting your wishes and your desires.
I'm curious on how, you know, because you've been doing this work for a few years now, and I'm curious how you came across TMS and how you came across the mind-body connection, how you came across Dr. John Sarno's work, because that's where it started, right, for you.
Sarno came a little later for me than most people. The way that it started with me was that I was working with a client in the gym, and he mentioned an acupuncturist. And I went to see the acupuncturist, and while I was talking to her, I was telling her what I was experiencing and how I was into nutrition and diet. And at one point, I said something, and she said to me, trauma. And I had like this blank stare in my face, and what do you mean trauma? And she goes, childhood trauma. And I go, what does that have to do with back pain? Like, it was puzzling, confusing. And I left out of that office feeling upset. I felt that she was trying to say that it was all in my head. I was angry about it. And at the same time, for some strange reason, it felt true. Like, it felt true to me. I was angry about it, but it felt true. And I let it go. I brushed it off. I didn't think much after that. And then I met with a friend of mine at a charity event, who's also an acupuncturist. And I was telling him about my diet and everything. And then he comes and he says something to me. And I stared at him. He said something about, you got to work the mind. And I thought, what? Another one? It's like two people. And like, and I was there like at this charity event, scratching my forehead going, is it just me? Are people trying to say I'm crazy? Like, what's going on, you know? And I left it alone. I just brushed it off. And then after that, I got some calls from people on YouTube, got some messages, and people were telling me, hey, I saw your video on diet, and just want to know if we could talk about diet. I said, yeah, sure. You know, so we got on Skype, just like me and you are on Skype right now. And we got on Skype, and the first person shared their story with me, and at one point they go, man, I appreciate you so much, Ralph. Thanks for helping me. You know, I've always had a rough life. Ever since I was a kid, man, I've had a rough childhood. And it started to click. And I'm going, what do you mean you had a rough childhood? And they go, yeah, I had a rough childhood. So I go, okay, hold on. Give me a second. I'm going to have to write this down. And I started to take notes of the stories that people were sharing with me. And then another person came, I want to know about that, the diet. And then the same story. And I'm going, wait a minute. There's something strange going on here. Why is it that these people keep telling me the same story? And that's where I really got involved. Like, I want to talk to more people. Like, just wanted to talk to more people. Tell me this story. And they all kept telling me the same story over and over and over and over. And I called the acupuncturist, who's a very good friend of mine. He's my mentor, he's my brother, and till this day I still talk to him. And I call him and I tell him, Brother Gauss, I got a question for you. He says, yeah, what's going on? I tell him, I'm experiencing this. And I was in a panic, and I didn't even know I was in a panic. I was freaking out. And I tell him about it, and he says, come to my office. So I went to his office, started doing acupuncture. We started talking, and after that, it was crying and crying and crying, lots of crying. But I started to feel even better after that. I thought I was already in full remission, and I noticed that my mobility got better. And I'm going, wow, I didn't know my mobility could get better than this. You know, I just kept getting much better physically. And from there, it became a journey about self-actualization, you know, getting to know myself more and talking to that gentleman till this day, just exploring myself and getting more curious about who I am and what is it that I really enjoy, what is it that I'm really here to experience. And then after that, at some point, I came across The Divided Mind. That was the first Arno book that I read. And I read the Divided Mind, and it started to make even more sense. But at that time, I wasn't impressed anymore. Then I read Healing Back Pain, which surprisingly was on my bookshelf. And during my pain moments, I probably read like the first 10 pages and put it back on my bookshelf. It's almost like when a person is in that state of mind, they avoid what they don't want to see without realizing that they're avoiding it.
Yep.
For some strange reason, motivation steered me away from healing and not towards healing. And that's something that I see nowadays in my practice. The majority of people who are on this healing journey, they're actually motivated to move away from healing, and they don't realize it. And what does that look like? I'll share with you a story so you can get a visual of what would be a similar way of doing it. Let's say you want to lose 10 pounds and you say, okay, I'm ready to join the gym. I'm ready to lose 10 pounds. And all you have to do is change your diet a little bit and walk more. But in your mind, you know, you're afraid of losing those 10 pounds, but you don't know it. You think you're motivated to lose those 10 pounds, but you're really motivated to lose those 10 pounds. So you join the gym, you get a gym membership, and you say to yourself, let's see, before I do this membership gym stuff, I should go and get myself some new shoes. And you go to Modell's and you buy yourself new shoes. And then you go, maybe I should get a few pairs. And you go, you get a few pairs of shoes. Then you say, maybe I should get some shorts, matching shorts. You get yourself matching shorts. Then you get yourself matching shirts and headbands and wristbands. And, you know, you're in there looking like a professional athlete. And you have yet to start the first exercise. And when it's time to get on that treadmill or the elliptical or just lift some weights, when it's time to do that, all of a sudden, maybe I'll start tomorrow. And you go home, and as soon as you go home, you get a phone call from your buddy, and your buddy says, hey, man, you know, I got to tell you something that happened to me. And you go, oh, what happened? And he goes, I don't know, man, but I'm going to need some help. And you go, oh, yeah, I'll be there to help you. And then all of a sudden, your buddy tells you he needs a babysitter. And now you're like, yeah, I'll help you babysit. Oh, man, I don't have time to go to the gym. And and you just completely steer away from the gym. And somehow, some way, it's always because somebody else needed help. You didn't have enough money. You didn't have enough time. You know, you've tried everything and it didn't work. So now you're just out and about and so on. There's always a reason that makes perfect sense to the person. I'll tell you one of my experiences. There was a gentleman here in New York who was a chiropractor. And the chiropractor said to me, Ralph, you work as a trainer, right? I said, yeah, I work as a trainer. He says, my office is right around the neighborhood where you work as a trainer. If you send me clients, I'll treat you for free. I said, yeah, sure. I showed up one day, and guess what? Never showed up again. And this was the time where I was 100% convinced that the only reason why I wasn't getting better is because I didn't have any money to pay for treatment.
Right.
And somehow, some way, there was no time to get to the chiropractor. But yet, I had plenty of time to do everything else that was motivating me towards healing, but at the same time, away from it. You know, so it was a form of, now I call it mental masturbation, but it was a form of mentally telling myself, this is what I want, but at the same time, being terrified of it for some reasons that now I understand, but back then I didn't understand it. Back then I didn't know why I was running away from it, but now I know.
You know, one thing I think about a lot is that people with, you know, chronic pain and people with TMS, it's like they almost need it. I think of it so similar to, you know, being an alcoholic or being a drug addict or, you know, the different vices, right? And for mm-hmm. some of us, like that vice becomes pain. And in Steve Ozanich's work, like he talks about some of the equivalents of TMS, and he talks about drug use, and he talks about alcoholism, and he talks about workaholism, like a lot of these things, like everybody's kind of got their vice to sort of shield themselves from having to look a little bit deeper into their lives, right? Like if I'm too busy drinking, if I'm too busy working, like then I don't have to spend the time or the energy focusing on things that maybe haven't gone as the way that I want them in my life, or you know, those kind of things, and being able to address them. And it sounds like that's kind of what you're talking about, this almost like necessity for pain.
Yes, that's, I strongly agree with that. A lot of people don't like it, but it's something that I experienced, and I see it a lot in my coaching practice. A lot of people do need their pain, and some people are better off with it, you know, which is one of the reasons why I spend very little to no energy at all advertising. You know, I don't run around telling people, hey, look, you know, occasionally we have to let people know that we're here, you know, and we're here to help or whatever, or I'm here to help. But I don't push a sale. I don't push the product. I don't push the service. It's like, here it is. If you want it, take it. If you don't, leave it alone. Because I tell you from experience, some people are better off with their pain. You know, some people are better off with it. And it's unfortunate to say, but this is not for everybody. You know, it's some people function better with their pain. And if they entertain the idea of getting rid of their pain, then more likely than not, they're not that person. You know, because the people who absolutely need their pain, they don't entertain that idea. They're the ones who get angry at these type of things. You know, like they're listening to this podcast and they'll be upset going, this is BS. I've tried everything. But the people who actually, you know, don't need their pain, they'll listen to this. Only thing is that they have to be aware of whether or not they're moving in the direction of healing, or they're just motivated to move away.
You know, I bring it up a lot. It's weird because like this podcast gets, you know, thousands of listens all across the world, you know, 30 or 40 countries every single month. And yet, when I share this kind of stuff with my, you know, my social media circle, nothing sort of gets like more of a turn blind eye, like mm-hmm. less attention than this stuff that, see, you know, you look at the iTunes reviews, the Apple Podcast reviews, like people have so many good things to say, and that like this has been a key function of their, or a key ingredient in their healing. And yet, like, you're right, like so many people don't even want to hear about it. And I don't know if part of that is just not wanting to sort of face inward and kind of put it on yourself, or part of it could just be this conditioning of, you know, the medical model, the surgeries and the chiropractor visits and the drugs. And when I say drugs, I mean like pharmaceuticals. And that brings me to an interesting point, because I know that, you know, treatment of AS and different kinds of things, like, because you've been put on prescriptions for different things in the past, right? And the side effects of those, I guess, talk about some of the prescriptions that you've been put on, and then maybe what some of the nasty side effects were.
I was actually on my way to taking biologics back when I was 22, and the doctor said, okay, well, this is it. You know, it's like, we're going to get you ready and you'll be fine. And I asked, what are the side effects? I was very scared. And if possible, make a note of that question, because I'm going to tell you something about that question specifically. I asked, what are the side effects from this medication? Right? And the doctor said, well, we don't know, but, you know, there seem to be a correlation between medication and cancer. I believe he said it was lymphoma. Some people get cardiac arrest. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I don't want to just drop dead all of a sudden. You know, it's like, I think I'd rather limp around, you know, and not have to do this. And then he said to me, also, if you don't mind, can we take some poop samples? Because we also believe that there might be a connection to the pain and something in the digestive tract, something in the stomach. And I said, yeah, sure. I mean, whatever I can do to help, which is another thing that came up back then. You know, psychoanalyzing myself from here, you know, looking back, it's like, man, that guy was so close, but he just couldn't see it, like the old me. So I was put on, I was given the TB test for tuberculosis. And the little bubble that they put on my arm got bigger than it was supposed to. But I didn't have anything on my chest x-rays. It was just the bubble. And because the biologics increased the chances of getting tuberculosis, they have to make sure that you don't have any tuberculosis in your body. So the doctor said, okay, look, we're just going to put you on these antibiotics for 9 months. And I asked, what are the side effects of that medication? And he said, well, the only side effect is, you might experience some tingling in your fingers or in your toes. And, for that, we'll give you vitamin B6 so that we can counteract it, so you don't get nerve damage. I said, was there anything else? Any other side effect? He says, no, just those. So I got on that medication, and he didn't tell me that at some point in the past, it was used as an antidepressant. And I got on that medication, and the next day, almost immediately, it was like the best I've ever felt. I was going to work with my hair all messed up. My shirt was dirty. I didn't even care. I just felt so good, emotionally, for some reason. I didn't even know why. And about a month after that, I had to go to the doctor every month to make sure that my liver and everything else was okay while taking that medication. And I told the doctor that I was having very lucid dreams, very vivid dreams, and I was starting to feel like I wasn't in reality anymore. And the doctor said, well, there might be something else going on because this medication doesn't do that. And the second month I went, I told the doctor I couldn't feel my limbs. I couldn't feel my arms or my legs. And he said to me, okay, get off the medication immediately, get off. And I got off the medication immediately, and holy smokes, it was the worst depression, anxiety, rage flash thing I've ever experienced in my life. They diagnosed it as a drug-induced psychosis, and it was a terrible experience. I was literally like walking through life, and I had no idea where I was or what the heck was going on. And that was one of the side effects that I had from that medication. After that, it was a blessing in disguise, because after that is when I got very resentful, very angry with the medical industry, and I started to educate myself on other alternatives, diet, exercise, meditation, and eventually that led the path to starting the YouTube channel, which didn't take very long before people were like, dude, help me, help me. And then I realized this isn't a rare disease. I was told it was rare, and it's not rare at all. There's so many people with AS that it was clear as day that it was not rare. It's very common. And talking to people, make a long story short, eventually we ended up here where we are today. And to add on to the thing I mentioned about what were the side effects, back then I wasn't aware that the majority of my anxiety was coming from fear that something bad was going to happen to me, or something bad was going to happen with my body. So my number one fear back then, which eventually at some point I dealt with facing that fear, was that there was something wrong with my body. And that's extremely important to keep in mind for anybody who's on the healing path. Why is that so important? Because anytime you eat something, you're scared. Anytime you do an exercise, you're scared. Anytime you walk, you're scared. Anytime you try to meditate, you're scared. Anytime you want to go to sleep at night, you're scared. When you wake up in the morning, you're scared. And everywhere you go, you're scared. Is there someone watching me? Is there someone following me? Is there someone trying to hurt me? Is something bad going to happen to the people I love? That constant thought running in the background is one of the thoughts that the pain is there to help you not see. Not everyone, obviously, but a lot of people have those type of fears. The majority of the time. So, to trust your body, as I mentioned all the way in the beginning of this podcast, to trust your body is to know that you'll be okay if you eat gluten. You'll be okay if you eat starch. You'll be okay if you eat a cheeseburger. Okay, if you prefer to not eat gluten, great. If you prefer to not eat starch, even better. If you prefer to not eat the cheeseburger, that's great. But every time you find yourself second guessing whether it's not to, whether it's whether it is or it isn't safe, and that's the key word, safe, to eat something, to do something, to participate in something, that's the problem. So it's like, I don't know if I should eat this or not. Well, that's the problem. And that's part of the problem.
That that fear, the fear cycle, it's like bringing back, it's like PTSD for me when I think about the what can my body not, what can and can't my body do, basically. And I remember I was having a lot of like mid back pain in the beginning, especially And I would go to, I went to a doctor, the doctor who did my shoulder surgery, and I had asked him, you know, what's like my mid back hurts, and you know, he, I mean, I don't know, a 10 second evaluation, it might have even been less than that, and he said, this is coming from your neck, and he was like, you know, it could be discs, it could be facet joint problems, you know, you move in this way, it could cause this problem, that kind of thing, and like, I just literally became scared of like doing anything. And I like, even to the point where I wouldn't even pick up my daughter and put her on my shoulder, you know, when like little kids sit on their dad's shoulders and like hold onto their head, like I wouldn't, I just wouldn't do that because I kept thinking like something terrible is going to happen here. So I just can't, you know, sorry, Zoe, I can't do that. It's just like that fear cycle. And part of the problem is like, I think a lot of medical professionals and, you know, maybe they think that they're doing good. You know, they perpetuate problems, and and a lot of it, like us looking at somebody in a white coat, like suddenly that's the authority figure and is able to dictate, you know, what it is with you in your life. So how did you get to a point, you know, we're coming to the last few minutes here. I'm curious on like, how did you get to the point of like, you know, I'm holding on. And then it's just sort of let go. And I almost imagine you, like, I get this imagery of you sort of, you know, you give up on trying to find the resolution because you know that it's within you. And it's like, you're sort of like your arms are spread and it's almost like, you know, surrender, right? Like that's where a lot of people I think need to get. Like, how did you get to that point? What's the advice that you could give to people that listen to this that are kind of struggling through it?
Oh, that's a very good question. So the first time I went into remission, it happened because I got focused on boxing. Boxing became the thing. It was like, oh, I was so obsessed with boxing that, you know, that was it. I took all my focus away from it. And I started boxing with the pain, you know, just with it. The second time it happened, it was when I gave up. I literally said to myself, ah, screw it. And I gave up. I gave up on trying to fix myself. Just literally just gave up. And I said the words, I give up. At the time I was, I remember this day almost as if it was yesterday. I was trying to get into a physical rehab program in college, and I told my wife, well, the woman who's my wife now, back then we weren't married, I tell her, you know what, the one thing that I enjoy most is reading. I enjoy thinking, deep thinking. I enjoy philosophy. So I don't even care if I'm in pain, as long as I can read my books and tell stories, I'll be fine. And the second I said that, the pain disappeared for about 3 days, and I hadn't even noticed. I did not notice that the pain was gone, which is something that a lot of people, when they struggle with chronic pain, when the pain disappears, a lot of times they don't notice it. And if they do notice it, they bring themselves right back into the loop by asking themselves, what did I do to make it go away? They go, what did I do? And then when the pain returns, they go, oh man, what did I do to make it come back? And they think they're doing something, right? Then the third and final time that I went into remission, I gave up, except that this time I gave up on something else, gave up on something different. I gave up on this certain things that I would do with life. So I moved the focus from what can I do to get rid of my physical pain, in the sense of stretching, eating, meditating, in the sense of those things. And I started to apply a similar principle to what can I give up on? What can I let go of in my life? Right? And then we started to look at things like, I got to give up on putting other people before me. And this is something that just last night I was talking to a very good friend of mine about that habit that's very common in the chronic pain community, putting other people before self, right? And what does it look like? If you have $200 in your pocket and you go to the supermarket and you love strawberries, let's just say that's your favorite fruit, you love strawberries, and you see strawberries there, like maybe $5 for a little cart. And you say to yourself, well, I got to save my money because I got to pay a bill or something, so I can't buy myself strawberries. And then you leave the strawberries because you're on a budget. You go home. And as soon as you get home, your neighbor tells you, hey, bud, you know, look, if you don't mind, can I borrow 20 bucks? And there you are giving your 20 bucks, right? So back then, there was a part of me that put the feeling of being accepted, the feeling of being liked, the feeling of being a good person to other people. I would put that first before anything else. So I was addicted to getting validation from people, including my parents, being acknowledged, being told that I'm a good kid, and so on. So the giving up part was no longer about, okay, I give up on healing this pain. It became, I give up on that behavior. Then I gave up on the behavior of trying to people please everyone and let go of the behavior of, for some strange reason, dismissing my accomplishments. It could be something as little as doing my bed, and that's a celebration. Back then, it was like, oh, it's not a big deal. I could have been the next, obviously not literally, just metaphorically speaking for the story, I could have been the next person to make it on the moon, and I would have told myself it was not a big deal.
Yep. I know exactly what you mean.
So I gave up on that. It's like, why do I try so hard, you know, back then? Why do I try so hard to stay humble and good? You know, what is it that I'm actually looking for? Then, studying with my mentor, we used some ancient African spirituality philosophies. And one of those philosophies are the 42 laws of Ma'at, which then later on became the Ten Commandments. And one of the 42 laws of Ma'at, is something practiced in ancient Africa, is I have not put myself on a pedestal. So by observing what I was actually doing in life, not with the pain or my body or my diet, in life, what was it that I was doing? I was trying very hard to put myself on a pedestal. And I went as far as sacrificing my health at an unconscious level to be on a pedestal. And in order to come down from that pedestal, I had to look at the parts of me that I considered to be arrogant. I had to look at the parts of me that I considered to be humble. I had to look at the parts of me that, you know, and so on and so on. And that's where the journey led me where I am today. So sometimes people ask me, Ralph, do you ever concern yourself with, you know, what happens if your pain returns? You know, what happens then? And I say, what happens then? You know, what's the big deal? You know, it's like, if the pain returns, what's the problem? I am not on a pedestal. I don't put myself on a pedestal to say to myself that I cannot, absolutely not experience pain. So yeah, if pain comes, it has a reason, it has a purpose. Eventually it'll leave again. I'm not going to kick it out, but if it shows up, it shows up. No problem at all. It is what it is, you know?
I love that. All right. Well, Ralph, this has been awesome. Again, you can find him at ralphfitness.com. That's ralphitness.com. So instead of fitness with an F, it's fitness with a PH. Ralph, thanks so much for your time, man. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. And thank you for having me.